Blog Talk Radio.
Hey, this is Stonewall Live, the best of gay and lesbian book, film, and media talk on Blog Talk Radio. I'm Nate Kleifeld, and I've got Jean Probasco. Hey, Jean, good evening.
Hello.
How are you? Did you get to hear that music there?
No.
Okay.
I didn't hear it.
Okay, the music was, I had some little technical problems here, but it's okay. What's going on? How's Phoenix tonight?
Phoenix is warm. It's cooler than normally is. It's like 100 degrees now, and it's supposed to get to about 112 in another week or so.
Yay. Okay. Listen, Jean is the author of Journey Out, Memoirs of Men Coming to Terms with Their Gay Lives After Being Married to a Woman. Jean, how did this book come about?
Well, I had been playing with the idea for some time before I even came out myself.
Uh-huh.
And I thought, you know, if someone needs to write a book or develop a support group or something for the guys who I found myself in, you know, I went to public libraries, I surfed the internet. I couldn't find anything.
Uh-huh.
So I thought, okay, if no one else is doing it, I'll do it.
Good.
And that's how it started.
Great. So you obviously were married to a woman for a while, is that correct?
Yes.
For how long?
32 years.
Oh, okay. And children?
Two girls.
Okay, we'll get into that. What are their ages right now?
One's 40 and the other one's 37.
Okay, because I've got a 35-year-old. I just want to add here, most of my listeners know my life. I was married also for 18 years. I have a 35-year-old son. My partner of 10 years was also married for 18 years, and he has a 35-year-old daughter. We both had journeys, and we'll talk about them and the likes and dislikes, but let's get back to the stories that Jean has written about in his book, Journey Out. That is the name of the book. It is available on Amazon.com. It is also available on Barnes & Noble, and I just found it on Books A Million. So, Journey Out by Jean Probasco. And you all have the spelling in front of you because you're watching it, this on a show page. So, Jean, tell me, how did you find the men that you interviewed and delved into their lives?
Well, that's crazy. I was just going to remain in my area, geographic area, and I couldn't find enough people who wanted to talk.
Uh-huh.
So they're from, I knew friends in Iowa, in Florida,
uh-huh,
in California, in New York, and all these people just kind of came out of nowhere. It was wonderful, and they wanted to participate.
Mm-hmm.
And I found one guy out from New York and one from California at a Fort Lauderdale men's resort.
Uh-huh.
And the others I just kind of picked up networking.
Great. So if you had to weave a common thread through these stories in your book, what would be the common thread of these gentlemen, let's say, in the first moments of coming out? What's their common thread?
Well, I would say that they don't want to come out.
Uh-huh.
Because they are happy in their their lives with their wives.
Right.
However, they've got to be true to themselves.
Right.
And
right.
But I find that it was awfully hard for most of these guys to come out.
Right.
And
all.
It splinters the family and
right.
makes life a little bit less palatable.
Right. I had a little technical difficulty for the first 30 seconds. I was playing something from March of the Falsettos, a Broadway play written by William Finn. I believe it was in the 80s. It's about it's my life, but he didn't know that. It's about a Jewish couple who, around the time of their son's bar mitzvah, father comes out, runs off with his best friend, and a male friend, and his song, the beginning song is "I Want a Tight-Knit Family," and he fantasizes his wife and her boyfriend and his son and his lover, and he's cooking linguine for them. And this is a constant theme that he wants everyone to sit down at a dinner table as he sings, "I want a tight-knit family." I have a terrible voice. And, he wants a family that harmonizes, almost like the King family. And this is what I read in all of these men and my life and probably yours, is that down deep you do want it all. You do really want it all. You want a wife. You want that wife to understand you. You also want to have a romantic relationship with someone you're actually sexually attracted to. And
right.
These are not bisexual men. You did not interview anyone that really came across as bisexual. Do you agree with me on that one?
I'm sorry?
Did you ever feel that any of your men thought they were bisexuals, or did that ever come up?
Well, one did.
Yeah,
one did. And he wasn't too concerned about it until mm-hmm. he decided that he prefers men to women.
Right.
And then he said, "Well, I'm actually gay. I'm not
right.
Bi."
Right.
And religion runs through this.
Right.
Very, very much.
Oh, my God. Oh, my God.
The Mormon men I interviewed were devastated by their church.
Yes.
Oh, what is it? Jehovah Witnesses.
Right.
One guy was in and out of the church, and they made him do several
right.
things that were strange to an outsider.
Right,
but,
right.
I have a minister that is in the book,
uh-huh.
former minister, Methodist minister, and I have a spiritual guide
mm-hmm.
in here also.
Right.
So I found that religions have a very strong impact on the men.
Right.
They want to come out. They don't know how to come out and be true to themselves and true to the church and their upbringing and all
right.
the social problems
that
we all face.
Right. Religion is a common thread through almost every single man you talk to. I was raised in an Orthodox Jewish home. My partner was raised in a strict Southern Baptist home. Though he converted to Judaism after we got together, so I got a toaster. I'm joking, but it's true. But, you know, it really was a common theme. And it doesn't seem that, you know, I mean, even though there are huge strides being made, I'm still hearing this religious fervor that they still believe it's so wrong and can't be changed that you should never, ever, give up your faith, and your faith will make it all better somehow.
Well,
that's what I keep saying.
I don't subscribe to that.
Well, obviously.
I think, based upon the research I did for this book,
uh-huh.
churches have nothing to do with marriage.
Right.
And somehow through the years, churches took over the marriage responsibility. So it really is not a religious situation for guys or women to marry.
Right.
It is a legal government issue.
Correct.
And that's the problem that we're having. But the churches are wanting to stick their nose into something that doesn't belong to them.
Right, right. But they make a lot of money off these things. They do. They make a lot of money off weddings. And keeping families there, yeah. So, I mean, and there have been strides made. I do want to bring that out. I've done research, and you've done research, and there have been many denominations that are now much more welcoming. I want to ask you, what was the saddest story you've ever heard without giving out names? Could you go over the saddest story?
Saddest. Well, I have to think about that one. I can give you the happiest one.
Let's go to the happiest, and maybe the saddest will come to you, okay?
Yeah, maybe it will. Talk to a guy who, he and his partner have 12 adopted children.
Whoa.
And they are living a utopia. The kids are straight A students.
Oh, my God.
Yeah. And they do chores around the house, and they help with the house, and they play in the cul-de-sac. They're happy. Very happy.
The sad stories that I read in the book were the ones where it really wasn't the estrangement of the wife and family as it was when the children were estranged. When the children kind of were the ones that felt. When they lost their children, they really felt, or they lost their children for a while.
Those, to me,
were the most heart-wrenching stories, something that I did not personally go through, but my partner did for a while, and then there was a reconciliation. Go ahead.
My daughters were very accepting. One more than the other.
Right.
But, it made things a little bit easier.
Sure, sure.
Knowing that they were accepting.
Right. But it is the I think the saddest thing is, you know, raising children and being their guide, their big strong father, and then because of a totally honest revelation that isn't really wrong, it's not betrayal, it's not a violence, it didn't beat anybody up, because of that they lose touch or closeness with their children. I think that is the saddest story about all the men that I've read about, all the men that I know that have gone through this. And I have a friend who hasn't seen his children in 23 years. They completely they were very young, and we're going to talk about this in a minute. Many men, when they decide or when they discover themselves, they have that revelation that they want to have a relationship with a man, and then they don't do it because of the children. They say, I'm going to wait till the kid is out of grade school, till they're out of high school, till he's 5 years old, till he's 13 years old. Do you feel like there's any good age to do this to a child?
I think, frankly, the younger the kid is, the better it is for them because they are aware, but it doesn't have the stigma that an older child would have.
Right.
So, and they grow up with that, you know, knowing that dad is gay or in my case, my grandchildren, three of them. I'd say all five of them. They call me Papa, and they're really coming around. They call and say, I love you, and carry on with their activities that they're doing.
Good.
So I'm just Papa.
Yeah. Well,
and the terminology of gay or being gay has no thread to them at all.
Great, great. That's good. That's good. It really is. So you think the younger the better because you acclimate every part of your life with a gay dad or a gay grandpa or and it's just right. So you're not because my son was in his early teens and questioning his own sexuality came into that and whether it was genetic or not, we had this whole monster discussion for a long time. He was very accepting. He was a 13-year-old boy that just spoke in monosyllables back then, so so that was it. Okay, so most of the men were how old?
Well, they range from 23, I think it was, to men in their 70s.
Okay, so this is a big range of men. So, do you think is it easier for younger people or is it easier for older people? What's changed and how is it changing?
Well, two of the youngest ones are Mormon, and that was a big problem for them. But had they stayed in their relationship, it would have been more difficult for the entire family,
right?
Because they would eventually want to come out.
Correct.
So I think that was good.
Great, great.
As soon as you come out, the sooner you come out, the better it is for you and your family.
Yeah, you have no idea. I mean, everybody that's listening here, whether they've been married or they were, everybody had a coming out, unless they came out when they were 12 or 13. I think Barney Frank has the best quote. It's called, "Everyone has a coming out method. It's called talking." And the worst thing to do is to be quiet and hold that in your stomach. You will get an ulcer.
Yeah.
You will get heart disease. Well, you will have addictions. It will be just a nightmare. Well, I'm going to talk about something maybe in the next, maybe your next book or maybe my son's next book. Your daughters, I'm just going to ask them personal questions. If I get too personal, just say, shut up, Nate. Did they ever tell you about, obviously they're married, is that correct, both of them?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
No, one is.
Okay, one is married. Okay, so but they've been in long term relationships, both of them.
Say that again.
Both of them have been in long term relationships.
Oh yes.
Okay, have they ever told you about their fear, apprehension, cues they were looking for when they were dating in the early sifting? About what is in the back of their heads, they were thinking, what are they going to think when they find out my dad's gay? In other words, what are the cues that they looked for? And this is fascinating because you don't think about this the first time when you come out and the kids are young. That, you've given them a little extra baggage, I call it. And my son started talking about it about 5 years ago. And it was pretty funny because he says, and he doesn't know what to call it because he knows what gaydar is, of course, because he was raised by a flaming gay dad. No, not really, not flaming. But he was raised by an openly gay man most of his early teen and adult, young adult life, and everybody knew him and my partners, and it was very open. What he says he developed was a kind of a gaydar of homophobia, is that he could tell in an instant whether a new acquaintance, whether it was a girl or a guy or a fraternity brother or somebody he was working with, was a homophobe by the words they were using to describe other people or how they carried themselves or whatever. And he had to almost build the same kind of shell that I did, what is he going to think? How are you going to do? That second guessing of everybody. And I was just wondering if you ever heard that in any of your interviews or if your own children ever said anything to you about that?
No. Okay. I don't recall that, but my daughter's, my eldest daughter, when I told her, she said, "Dad, I thought so for years." That's okay. That's okay. I still love you.
Good, good, good.
And my youngest daughter has problems with it. She's coming around and she's being good. Daughterly.
Daughterly, good, good. Daughterly is good. Daughterly is very good.
I don't know if daughterly is a good word or not. It's a word. But I just made it. I just made it up.
Well, I understood it. It was acting like she should.
Sure.
Yeah, that's good. Actually, the way I found Jean, I want the listeners to know, is that Jean and I have a mutual friend, who's, I'm not going to name his name, a charming young man, because he's younger than I am, okay? So everyone who's younger than I am is a charming young man. Is that right? It's one great way to look at the world. And I was surprised when I read his story. I, of course, recognized his story because of Noah's circumstances. He came out of this pretty much unscathed, yet he had a pretty, I would say, rocky relationship. Do we all reach an equilibrium? Are we the same person? Are we stronger? Or, I mean, if we're a messed up person before and we come out, we're going to be a messed up person? Or does it make you stronger? Or are you the same person? What do you think? Because I'll give you my opinion.
Well, I think it makes you stronger. Because become authentic, and living as an authentic person is a heck of a lot easier than living as a chameleon, being who other people want you to be.
Right.
Sometimes you can do that. The wives that are leaving can be very, very bitter.
Uh-huh.
And we've had our lifetime before we come out, knowing that we're gay and accepting it and finally wanting to do something about it.
Uh-huh.
And the wife and family haven't had that privilege.
Correct.
It takes them some time to assimilate the information and do something with it.
Yeah, there's a book called The Other Side of the Closet. I don't remember who wrote it. Do you heard of that book?
No.
Okay, it was given to me by my therapist when I was coming out to give to my wife, and it's about the other side of the closet, the woman that you shared a closet with, a real closet with, who is all of a sudden without a support system. You jump out, you can go to a gay and lesbian community center, you can get online, you can go to a bar and start dating. You aren't damaged goods, really. I mean, most guys will date. You know, the dating is your own issue, whatever that is. But you have a support system built in. The gay community is not a great welcoming place, but you have a place in the gay community. All of a sudden, your ex-wife to be has no support system. She is not a divorced wife where somebody ran off with somebody with bigger tits or a younger vagina. She's someone who was betrayed from the altar on, and there's no support system. I mean, there are a few, but there is nothing that she can go out into a major city, walk into a community center, and find 20 people just like her, because they hide. And that's what this book is about. Is about healing that hurt that the wife has, because she has no, like you said, not only has she not had any time, but once she accepts that this is, you know, life goes on, there's no support system. I mean, it's a really interesting, it's called The Other Side of the Closet. It probably should be sold with your book, you know.
I don't know
if it's also in print. It's been
I will get it and read it.
Yeah, it's a fascinating book. And it's written by a woman a woman therapist who this happened to. I believe that's the story of that book. But we really, really have to talk about that. I have one more thing to talk, a big topic, and I'm not getting any calls, but I'm getting a little action in the chat room, and that is the question from the chat room is: do you think it's easier for a man who is previously married to partner with another gay man who was also previously married? Or do you think it matters at all?
I think it's easier for the partner to understand your situation if he had been married. However, my partner is not had not been married, and he's much younger than I am. So it's not only this is what we did back in the olden days,
but this
is the way you feel, and you just move on during life together.
Right.
So I don't think.
Right.
I don't think having a married spouse, or I mean a boyfriend, previously married, I don't think it makes much difference.
That's been,
as long as the love is there.
Yeah, I think as long as there's the love and communication that I am spending this time away from you because, and you know, I think you have to really come out and say, you know, and I think a lot of it. You know, a lot of it has to do with how accepting this man is into your blended family. I think
right.
I think that's the key. I don't think the key is experience. I think the key is, because I think every experience is different. I mean, my partner and I both, this particular partner and I both have had children from a previous marriage, and yet our experiences were 180 degrees different. What he learned and what his defense mechanisms and what his expectations were of his journey were completely different than mine. So it might as well have been, you know, I don't think it made any difference. I think the difference is...
It is an individual thing, I think.
Yeah, it's very individual. Yeah, it's one case at a time. I agree. But everyone kind of thinks that, you know, you should be with like. You know, people should gravitate to life. But in this case, I'm not sure that, I don't think we have enough role models. I don't think we have enough experience. I mean, come on, Stonewall was only 1969. Before that, we were living in the shadows. There was no gay and lesbian community centers. There was no gay and lesbian talk show that goes out to thousands of people. I mean, this is a, you know, we're charting unfamiliar territory, you know. The President of the United States, you know, said, you know, came out in front of gay marriage. That we don't know what that means even yet, do we?
Oh.
No, we really don't.
No, and the more people who come out early.
Yes.
That is in their teens or their 20s, when they first get a glimpse of what it's like, the easier it is for the nation as a whole to understand these people, because every family has at least one gay person.
Oh.
And they, if they would not want their gay relative not to be happy.
Right.
So I think the younger they come out, more understanding the parents or other relatives would be, and the whole discussion then of marriage and marriage, that would be a moot point.
Sure. Yeah, there wouldn't be anything called gay marriage. It would just be marriage.
Yeah, right.
That's just what we're looking for, right? Okay, ex-wives, do they see themselves as victims of homophobia, or do they just see themselves as victims of a lying man? What do you think? I'm getting these great questions.
Mine was a lying man. I think the experience I've had in the interviews for the book have all been lying, not homophobias as much as it. You've lied to me. We have spent an entire lifetime to this point.
Right.
And you've lied to me. You were the person you said you were going to be.
Right. But the reason they did was fear of homophobia. And so, in my case, you know, in my case, my ex-wife was different. Oh, we have a call, but we only have 10 seconds. Oh, no, I can't take the call. But anyway, I want to say good night and thank you so much, Gene. This was so much fun.
Well, thank you very much for calling. I enjoyed this very much.
Great.
And I hope your listeners pick up the book and check it out because it's
good.
I've gotten very good reviews on it.
Yes, you have. And we will send the link out to you so you can spread it around. Thank you and good night.
Good night.